Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always, Chad Metz. Yes, well, I just wanted to hurry through the introductions because we have loads of movie news to talk about this week.
Really?
Yes. So, Chad, there's a small movie coming out this month, and the PR campaign has ramped up about it. And I figured out something very succinct. About the internet film media community. You know what that would be, Chad?
What's that?
That they can take a solid journalistic spread and turn it into a week's worth of stories. A week's worth of stories that you can avoid by simply clicking on the link and reading the story at its original origin points. So in the days following, when headlines pop up on the website promoting other elements of that story, you'll have already known what was said in original context.
Yeah. Yeah, because I never noticed that there's a whole week's worth of Star Wars stuff. But when you say it, I'm like, yeah, you're right. But I don't...
Like, the story, like, there last 2 weeks, there have been two separate spreads. There have been the Vanity Fair spread, mm-hmm. and then there was this Rolling Stone spread. In both instances, the stories dropped on a Monday. Well, I have to take that back. EW does their own little drip, drip, drip throughout the week. I mean, by Wednesday, they've got all their information out. Rolling Stone, it was like, on Monday, here's the article. And like every day subsequently, it was one part of that article taken out of context and like blown up into a story.
Yeah, and that's why I typically, for Star Wars, I avoid those because I have this strange willpower for Star Wars where it's like, I won't read this because I don't want to know anything. But anything else? No, I'm just going to click it.
Okay, so let's talk about a few of the juicy bits of that Rolling Stone article, which is a great read for any Star Wars fan, even if you have to revisit it after the movie comes out. But the first bit of news that we got out of that was that Rian Johnston had no preconditions on who Rey's parents would be, but it just so happened he came up with the same answer that J.J. Abrams came up with and told Daisy Ridley about on the set of Force Awakens. Your thoughts on the fact that Daisy Ridley has known who Rey's parents are since 2014, and Rian Johnston had the creative freedom to change it if he wanted to, but came to the same conclusion.
So, her knowing the parentage, that does not surprise me at all. I would imagine that, you know, they would tell her. It just seems like something she would need to know as, you know, oh, the person portraying Rey. Now, this whole thing with Rian having the ability to change who it was, but deciding not to, one, I'm glad he decided to not do that, because even though I've heard that you know, JJ had an idea. They never really... The fact that they gave him the freedom that he could change it is...
It's not like JJ was planning a whole bunch.
Exactly.
It's like he was literally flying by the seat of his pants.
Yeah. That, and
like, November 2014, like, they fire... November of 2013, they fire Ardnett, and they're like, we're going to start filming in February. So you've got between now and February to get a script to us.
Which... So, that in itself, considering that they knew going into it, it's like, oh, we're making three of these. And then they were just like, you know what? You know, now we just got to kind of make this crap up right at the last minute. For the fact that you're trying to plan this out for three movies, I don't like that. Because then you can go ahead and change stuff. And when you start changing stuff like that, you can contradict what you've already done.
Still waiting on Masquerade's story. I'm going to be ticked if we get out of this movie and I still have not heard Masquerade's story about where that damn lightsaber came from.
Oh, well, where the lightsaber came from,
an interesting story, yes. But it's a story for another time. And we know that Masquerade's screen time has been cut down, so...
Yeah, so with that, I don't think you'll get that story. However, I do think we should get that story.
I mean, it's the only bit of exposition she has to give. It's her only purpose of existing.
Well, we'll see if they keep finding a way to have her exist without doing the one thing she needs to do.
Somebody asked Lupita Nyong'o that on the Black Panther press tour. It's like, What's the story behind the lightsaber? Are you actually going to eventually tell us what the story of the lightsaber is? Do you know... Dude, did they tell you what the story of the lightsaber is and you just can't tell us?
You know, her answer is going to be, I know, I can't tell you. You'll find out eventually. If eventually is in the next movie or eventually it's like, oh, some book they wrote, right, 5 years down the line. You'll find out eventually. So, all in all, Ryan having the creative freedom to do it is, you know, in the movie making sense is wonderful. However, in the larger Star Wars storytelling sense is like, why would you even do that? If you know who it is, let it stay that. But him coming to the same conclusion kind of makes it seem like it's the logical one, which makes me wonder what that is, considering everybody has their different interpretation. What's the logical one? And I have no idea what it is, and I've quit trying to figure it out.
Well, the story, and again, this is going to be a theme that we come back to. The context and the story itself, the author of the piece says, that would tend to lead me to believe that it is not a new character that we haven't met before.
Yes.
That it is somebody who we have met before. And the scene we get in Force Awakens is her just being dropped off by a person with a hand. An actual hand. So it wasn't her. It wasn't Luke.
I mean, he's got two.
So, but it was on the...
It was on the...
yeah.
The right side. Side,
yeah. Look. Giving him that creative freedom is fine. But even JJ in the piece kind of alludes to, yeah, there was a little bit more cooperation between us at the end of Force Awakens than he's really letting on. I mean, we know the story about him changing where R2 was at the end of Force Awakens so that R2 could reunite with Luke, which I expect to be a very emotional moment in the movie when not only does he reunite with R2-D2, but R2-D2 is on the Falcon. And we've seen the shots.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to me, one of the things that no one's talking about is this movie takes up immediately after Force Awakens, which means Han's only been dead for a few hours. And Luke now has to find out that his friend is dead.
Yeah. I imagine that'll be part of his reacting badly to seeing Rey and all of this stuff. It's all about seeing how this all plays out at this point.
I mean, it's... I don't mind him having that creative freedom. I'm surprised that in the natural course of creative events, he found the same answer. And that would lead me to believe that it is, you know, one of the four possibilities we've talked about for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
It's either she's a Skywalker, she's a Solo, she's a Qui-Gon Jinn, she's a Mace Windu, like, she's tied to some kind of Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
I've maintained at different points two different, like, my original thought was she was just some girl who happened to survive the slaughter of the Jedi Temple, but that gets undercut by the fact that Luke literally looks like he's never seen this girl before in her life, and reportedly the first line of the movie is, "Who are you?" So if the first line of the movie is, "Who are you?" clearly he's never seen her before. But I think that if they're going to go, I now believe I'm leaning more toward now that Leia and Han are just bad parents and were hanging out with their kid and didn't want to break her heart. But we're going to see, but that does lend itself more toward like, yeah, there was probably a logical answer and this was the obvious one that we came to.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. So now we just got to figure out what the logical answer is. I have thoughts of his Luke and Leia. I mean, Han and Leia, but...
Would make them really bad parents, though, wouldn't it? Like, your long-lost daughter shows up. There's a shot in Force Awakens at one point where she talks about her parents. And, like, Han and Chewie look at each other really quickly. But, like, it would be really bad if you're, like... Not that Star Wars has the greatest history of parents.
Not at all.
Or aunts and uncles, for that matter. But... If literally your kid, who you haven't seen in 20, 25 years, shows up and, you know, with your starship, and you don't say anything to her, and then you die in front of her?
Yeah.
That's pretty messed up.
So, and that's part of the reason why I don't want it to be them. However, that seems to be picking up steam, so...
It's picking up steam because of that last trailer, official trailer that we got, which was entirely about the duality of the Kylo and Rey journey. And we also have the history of knowing of the expanded universe canon and of Jason and Janna Solo. Mm-hmm. So, and we know that Luke and Leia were twins, and twins run, you know, genetically in families and all of that. So, I mean, I think that's why it's picking up steam, the way they've marketed this movie as the journey of Rey and Kylo.
Less than 2 weeks to find out. Can't wait.
So, the next piece of news that came out of that was an interview. Part of the overall piece has an interview with Adam Driver. Mm-hmm. And he talked about his motivations for the role and his idea. And one of the things I found interesting that he said was that Kylo is more the product of someone who feels like he was never enough. That his parents cared more about the cause that they had devoted their life to than their own kid. And so... he comes to basically resent the rebellion and leans more toward his Vader grandfather, because his grandfather stands for everything that his parents aren't. You know, usual rebellion type, you know, teenage rebellion type stuff, but teenage angst. But in this particular case, it's really more of a... In this particular case, it's more of like he was trying to go along to get along, identifying as with the rebellion, and then ultimately coming to resent the rebellion because it took his parents away. You know, I didn't have the childhood I could have had. My parents weren't around enough because of that pesky rebellion. If there had never been a rebellion and the Empire would have won, I would have had my happy family life. And that's kind of his worldview, and it's kind of shaped how he perceives things in his relationship with his parents. He also said talked in the piece about how for Kylo, he was hoping that the petricide, the killing of Han Solo, would bring him peace, and it has done the opposite. So
those are all interesting points. I'm curious to see how much of that inner story for Kylo we see in the movie. Because I think it's got some valid points. I don't think it'll make people like him anymore.
Well, I mean, remember, too, we had a trilogy of films that were supposed to be the equivalent of a Shakespearean tragedy but are not executed on such level. Like, just because Adam Driver has this all planned out and is acting with these methods... And methodologies and these emotions and motivations doesn't necessarily mean that they will be telegraphed through his performance or be included in dialogue.
Yeah, I'm actually leaning towards actually not seeing most of that, but I think it would be fun to see it. But I'm not expecting it. All of that sounds like, you know, I hear all of it. I know it's all valid. But I still like, so you're just a brat. Pretty much. I mean, you, in a child's mind, it works. Like, my parents aren't giving me the attention I want, so I act out. But you're grown. At some point, you gotta realize, oh, they're doing this for the greater good. Yeah, it sucked for me, but it was the greater good. And not be like, no, it just sucked for me, so I'm just gonna go ahead and kill people. Because, you know, why not?
It sucked for me. And if my granddad had won, I would have been okay.
That is a big logical leap for him to take. But
like then again, my mother and father would have stayed together. Like they would have stayed on Alderaan, and we'd have all had a happy little family. Not Alderaan, but we would have all stayed together. Well, I mean, Jimmy Smith, you know, was crying out with the cry of a thousand voices, and then all at once was silence and brought great pain to Obi-Wan Kenobi. But, I mean, I could see how... Think of someone like Chelsea Clinton. you know, here's a woman who's in late high school, early college years when her father's in the White House, growing up with that kind of media spotlight, and
she was younger than that.
Right. And imagine having to share your father with the entire country for 8 years and having every move you make scrutinized, and a mother who wants to do the same thing, and the kind of time that takes away from Chelsea, from eventually baby Charlotte, you know, that the mom and grandma are around all that often because they're out campaigning or they're out over traveling the world as Secretary of State, or they're doing this or they're doing that. It would become, bring it home even further, imagine a kid who has a lawyer for a dad,
yeah,
who's just constantly at the office, constantly doing things that he's got to do to help provide for a good living for his family. But, you know, the old Cat in the Cradle song, you know? It's a very powerful idea. And I could very easily see how it could be the case when when your parents are famous people in a rebellion.
No, it's a very valid case. It's just the fact that I don't think it would. I mean, he's already not endeared to people anyway by design because, you know, he killed Han. I don't think any of this would
help his cause. Which he was compelled to do by Snoke. Who was like, if you do this, if you put your parents away, your weakness will be put away. And that is the one thing that Snoke cannot abide, is weakness, according to Andy Serkis. Who confirmed, by the way, he's 8 to 9 feet tall. So he's, you know...
I mean,
he's not 30 feet tall, yeah, but he's 8 to 9 feet tall. Which still won't make for a great lightsaber duel with Luke Skywalker, but...
No, I mean, but it's better.
Right.
I mean... It'll just be a big contrast. It'll be like, you know, my kid fighting Shaq.
Or it'd be like, you know, the way that in Lord of the Rings, when they're dealing with the fire demon and Fellowship, and, you know, the relationship of Gandalf and the size of Gandalf to the fire demon, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Or Harry Potter to the troll in the first Harry Potter movie.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's... That's like the limit of how big he could be.
Or Hulk in the Avengers.
Okay. Yeah.
Hulk in the Avengers. That kind of a thing. So, the other part of it, too, the piece that dropped out of that bit, that Rolling Stone article, was Mark Hamill saying that there was a time when he considered not coming back to this role, and he was... very committed not to not doing it. And then Harrison Ford held Disney hostage for Indiana Jones 5 and said he was coming back. And then he felt like, well, shit, I can't not come back.
Yeah. I mean, I guess out of the three, I figured he would have been, if not first, second. I figured Carrie would be down for it. And I just figured he would be as well. I always knew Harrison Ford was like, I don't want to come back.
Always more identified himself with Harry, with Indiana Jones.
Which I don't understand why he has that, such a gap in between what these two people, because not that far off. But yeah, so it is surprising to hear that Mark say that. I mean, I'm glad he's back. I know he's been doing other things, mostly voice work, which he's very good at. But I just figured, you know, there's enough time. Any baggage he had with Luke Skywalker, he put that away, and was. Will be able to move forward with
it. There was a very interesting thing that I did not know. Apparently, one of the things he did after Star Wars was he was in the Broadway version of Amadeus. And he was the lead. He played Beethoven in Amadeus. And when Spielberg bought the rights and he was going to make the film, Hamill wasn't even allowed to audition for the role
because of Luke.
Because of Luke. And Steven didn't want that connection there.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't imagine, like, paying that kind of personal artistic price for something and not bearing any kind of ill will or resentment toward.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different time, because most people that did those kind of roles back then, once you did that role, that's what people knew you as, like Christopher Reeve. He's Superman forever and for always. But now, like the time we're in now, people can do those roles and they can separate them from themselves and they can still go out and do things. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know there are people from back then that were jaded because of that very reason, which is why I
Michael Keaton.
Yeah, Michael Keaton was, yeah, for a long time. He,
like, Jack Frost was one of the last things he did, and then he went away for a long period of time.
Yeah. And but now he can come back and do these things.
He can do Birdman, he can do The Founder, he can do Spotlight, he can do films like that, and still go do Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm. So I never knew that Hamill might have had some kind of, you know, resentment for being Luke Skywalker. I just kind of always figured he did. And I just figured that, you know, once enough time elapsed, it comes back around and you appreciate it a little bit more.
It was surprising to me because I've always seen Hamill kind of the same way I see, or did see Leonard Nimoy or Shatner, people who were on the con circuit on a regular basis. Like, they had George Takei. No problem showing up at cons, like, embracing that character and that side of themselves. And, you know, that's something that kind of did surprise me. Because it was like, I kind of figured this would have been, like, he would have been like, sign me up. Like,
yeah.
I'm the definitive voice of a Joker for our generation. Like, I'm good. Let's revisit this.
But in that case, he's a little bit different than the other two because he is the voice of the Joker. And to a lot of people, I mean, yeah, everybody knows Luke Skywalker, but a lot of people will be like, oh, the Joker first. So he can be on the con circuits and he can do that, and he'll still be known for something else. So it kind of like mitigates it a little bit. I can't imagine, like, with not being able to get any kind of good work and you've already done the role because you were Luke Skywalker. Yeah, of course you're going to be a little jaded. But, you know, it's been 30 years, so I figured he would have gotten over it.
And he negotiated a very good toy. Like, he, unlike the rest of them, after, like, Empire, he negotiated toy rights and merchandising rights, and so he made a little bit more money than some of the others.
Smart.
So the only other large piece of information that to come out of that spread, and again, go read the Rolling Stone article. It's brilliant, even if you have to wait till after you see the movie. Was Daisy Ridley. Now, the headline that splashed all across the web internet was, Daisy Ridley, done with Star Wars after Episode 9. Actual quote, I can't think that far ahead. Like, I've got 7 films coming out, including Star Wars, this year. Like, I am insanely busy. I am never not on a movie set. I can't think about, you know, anything past 9, and I can't answer to anything past 9. I haven't signed for anything past 9, and I can't even conceive of coming back when I'm 55, 30 years from now.
Yeah, wasn't that the gist of the question? Like, do you still see yourself coming back, like, after such a gap?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, what do you expect her to say?
Like, she said, I can't even envision myself as a 55-year-old woman.
She's like, what, 25?
She's 25.
You asked me when I was 25, what do I see myself coming back to do something I did 30 years prior? Like, dude, I'm 25. I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. At least she has like a year or two planned out because she knows she's making these movies. But a random 25-year-old, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. Get out my face.
Right. And that was pretty much what she said. And then it blew up on the internet, like, Daisy Ridley, done with Star Wars after Episode 9. And then you compound that with the subtle little twinge about that JJ has in the piece where he's like, you know, this may be the end of the, will this be the end of the Skywalker saga? I don't know. We'll see. But to me, that's also already answered because the Supreme Boss of Supreme Leader Kennedy came out and said, like, we're going to develop movies based on Rey and Poe and Finn, and we're going to continue on with these new characters that we've created. And, you know, you're giving Johnston the keys to his own trilogy, which is going to have nothing to do with the Skywalker saga, and everybody pretty much expects it to be some form of Knights of the Old Republic, or at least that's what they're hoping it is. Personally, I'd let the man do whatever he wants, mm-hmm. like, especially if Last Jedi ends up getting Mark Hamill an Oscar nomination. Like, let the dude do what he wants. Mm-hmm. But I was shocked to see, like, this internet raging fire about Daisy Ridley never coming back after episode 9.
Hold on. You're shocked to see an internet rager.
An internet rager over a quote that was completely taken out of context when they provide every story that has information from this Rolling Stone article links back to the Rolling Stone article. So all you have to do is click on the link and it'll take you back to the original story.
Yeah, everything you're saying is very logical and rational. However, you know how the internet works. They got as far as Daisy Ridley is done with Star Wars, and that was all they saw, and they went set this sucker on fire. They didn't read that article. They didn't read what it linked back to. There was none of that stuff. They just wanted to get mad because the internet can be an angry, angry place. I am not shocked by this at all.
My Twitter can become a very angry place.
Oh, shit. My Twitter can become an angry place. It happens, but with stuff like this, this is just the...
Like Alabama getting into a national championship playoff.
We're not talking about football in this, particularly not that I hate them so much.
Benefit of the doubt much?
I'm not doing this with you. This is prime internet fodder. It's like, ooh, it's kindling with gasoline, and there's a box of matches right there. I can't help but just blow it up.
My favorite was like, what does this mean for The Last Jedi if Daisy Ridley says she's done after 9?
Nothing, because this is 8. That means it's already done.
Yeah, it's done. And it's like... But that was... But for those wondering, that was the information that she provided, which was basically, I'm busy and I don't think past...
It's just dumb.
All right, so let's move on. So, Chad, there was a very popular children's television show on PBS over the years. It was called Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? It has been absconded by other people who were fired this week for other purposes. But for the most part, everybody just knows Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? So I ask you, Chad, where in the world is Bryan Singer at this moment?
I didn't know where that was going. I don't know. Apparently Fox doesn't either. And when you're actually in actively shooting a movie, that is a big ass problem.
At least John Drink was just passed out in his apartment.
Yeah, they knew where he was. It was just like, oh, deal with him. We don't know what Brian... Look, full disclosure, I'm not the biggest Bryan Singer fan. I'm not the biggest fan of his work. And I kind of don't really like what I know about him as a person. Which leads into this disappearing act, because it's not the first time he's done this crap.
Third movie in a row he's done it, actually.
And knowing what his alleged behavior, I can only think the worst.
And that was my first thought. I tweeted you, did the sexual misconduct stuff flare back up? Because it flared up. As he was getting ready to release Days of Future Past or Apocalypse?
Apocalypse.
Where it was flaring up about the abuses that had allegedly taken place on the original X-Men set in Vancouver back in 2000. But those kind of got glossed over, and I thought, well, maybe with all the renewed spotlight on sexual harassment and assault, now that maybe they had drugged those back up. But Fox is like, we don't know where he is.
Exactly.
So if Fox doesn't know where he is... It's not like they put him on hiatus.
Yeah, I don't think it has to do with any allegations and Fox trying to cover their ass. I think this is Bryan Singer has went and he's done something stupid and now he's got to go lay low for a few days. Like
in that, or he just decides to take miniature vacations during his shoots.
But if
you're the director, you have control over the schedule. You can plan to take a.
You can put the show on hold for a week or two or whatever, as long as it's planned out. Like, for not showing up, and then reading all the other stuff into this is like him and Remy Malek weren't getting along because Brian would just show up whenever he wanted to. And it doesn't sound like a very good set to be on.
As most Bryan Singer sets don't sound like good places to be on.
Yeah, so, I mean, in my mind, when I hear that he just disappeared, I think he's going on a little kitty razor. And he's had a little bit too much fun, so he just like... laid low until he can come back. But, I mean, if that is the case, I hope somebody blows this up real quick because dude needs to be stopped.
But it was surprising to me when he's decided to take on the Freddie Mercury biopic anyway as his next feature, when the 20,000 Leagues thing had been around for a while. Yeah. It seemed like a more natural fit for his talents than a biopic about a rock and roll legend. So, I mean, and that movie itself has had its creative issues with the casting and then recasting of Freddie Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. And the estate seems heavily involved with the production of it.
Yeah, that's why we didn't get Sacha Baron Cohen.
Right, and it's been like three, and it's been like the last three films that Singer's done where he's disappeared like this, and it's just like something's up.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm intrigued to see what comes of this because I keep an eye out for Bryan Singer stuff like this. Because I think he's a dirtbag, and eventually his time is going to come.
Indeed. Well, we will see. So Chad, there is a movie that started its press availability this week. There were set visits and other things that happened, but this is now a publicity tour for a movie that's coming out the same day as Star Wars. Is there a movie coming out the same day as Star Wars, Chad?
No.
Yes, there is.
What? Oh. Go ahead, say it.
There is a small movie. Would you like to explain to the fine folks what my Twitter has been like the last 2 weeks or so?
That movie doesn't come out the same day as Star Wars. It comes out the week after.
Okay, so it's still getting killed. It's still make like $5 million.
I don't know. I hear good things about this.
I hear good... I argue down those people, as you know.
You argue me now. To fill everybody in. Jumanji, the new Jumanji, comes out...
Welcome to the Jungle.
Welcome to the Jungle. Comes out the week at Star Wars. And Brian's going to have, like, super nerd rage up until... He'll subside for Star Wars, but then he'll kick right back up again when Jumanji comes out.
I have a feeling there will be a Jumanji part of the Star Wars podcast where I just go on a... crazy rant at some point.
No, you will not bring up Jumanji and Star Wars. We're just going to talk about Star Wars.
So, what happened on my Twitter this week, Chad?
I don't remember specifically. I know I told you that people were saying it was good, getting positive vibes.
Fun action movie, yeah.
Yeah, what else happened after that?
I may have tweeted The Rock.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. You tweeted somebody else, too.
I tweeted an actual reviewer who actually responded to me in kindness and said that, you know, he could understand my pain if I was a fan of the original.
Okay.
And he was totally okay with the tone and shift because it worked so well.
And I think that's where I'm going to end up. But, you know, I understand. I don't care about the movie near as much as you do, so none of this bothers me.
I'd like to put out a free advisory here. If Dwayne The Rock Johnson would like to come onto this podcast and discuss his upcoming film, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, we'd be more than happy to accommodate his schedule, his very busy schedule, and make it work. And I promise that we will have a free and open discourse about the movie and see where that goes.
I don't know how useful I'm going to be during that podcast. I'm kind of... Even though I don't see all of his movies, I'm kind of a Rock fan, so I'm probably not going to really say all that much because, you know, I don't want to embarrass myself. But
I, on the other hand, do it already.
Then I guess I will have to talk and be like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I still like you. I'm sorry.
Look, my whole deal on this, and me and you and T-Ball have established there will be a viewing of this movie. if nothing else than to watch my face melt for 90 minutes. The Rock is not that guy. The Rock is not that guy who, like, takes a meaty role and gives the, you know, performance of a lifetime. And the thing that I've been advocating in all of these tweets, whether it be to EW, whether it be to The Rock, whether it be to reviewers of the film, is no one understands the reading film as literature version of that movie. The book is tiny. You can literally do anything with the book.
Yes.
And what they did in the original had action in it, and it had comedy in it. The monkey's driving the car and the police car and the whole thing with the cop and all that. But at its heart, it's a story about a kid who gets sucked into a board game and then comes out 30 years later. Imagine having to grow up in a war-torn area of Cambodia with no family and you're just on your own, forced to scavenge and live however you can. And then you get flown back to the United States. Imagine what kind of culture shock that would be. Imagine what kind of a hard adjustment it would be to making your new life in America. Like, that was the way that story was set up. He had to deal with the ramifications of all of the actions that had taken place because he had gotten sucked into the game. His parents are dead, right? They died penniless because they poured their entire fortune into trying to find him. And the town assumed that the father had murdered him. So pair of shoes went out of business. It's gone. They're dead. His girlfriend, or his little crush girl at the time, had psychological damage because she saw her friend sucked into a board game. She ran around trying to tell people, I saw my friend get sucked into a board game, and no one believed her. They thought she was psychotic. She was in and out of mental hospitals the rest of her existence. And when they find her 30 years later, by using a phone book, by the way, something that doesn't exist anymore, she's offering to do psychic readings. Their house has been sitting empty for years and years and years and years. He comes out of the video game, and he has to adapt to walking around with a young Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
A young Kirsten Dunst, and has to adjust to being around children, which is something he had never had to do in the jungle. He has the hunter who's coming after him because he was the biggest game in the jungle because he was the only human, allegedly. Although we see, SUVs and stuff driving around in the jungle in this movie, so clearly he was not the only human in the Jumanji jungle. And Williams plays it so heavily, like, I need to finish this game so that I can try to get some semblance of my life back. And the shaving of the beard, and why are you in my home, and all this stuff. And to take that, and the heroism, and the action-adventure part of it, and the dramatic action turn tone that the movie had, and turning it into a body-switch comedy in a video game that granted apparently is being called the best video game adaptation ever, which pretty does not speak very well for the history of video game adaptations.
No.
But that's not this. Like, imagine going from Star Wars and instead of having the Empire Strikes Back, you have Episode One. you go from a space opera to a heist movie. Like, in tone, from Star Wars to to Empire. That would be jarring. And these films, which were supposed to be in a trilogy, would not seem to fit at all. And that's my issue, is there was a director attached 3 years ago. This movie was supposed to come out the same Christmas as Rogue One. It got pushed back. They fired that director. They brought on The Rock, because they brought on The Rock, and The Rock wanted his own people on it. And now we get this. And then in the middle of it, Robin Williams passes away, and so they try to make half-hearted, like, poor Kelly Gillian, or whatever her name is, who...
Karen Gillian.
Karen Gillian tries to make up some BS about, well, I always wondered what the jungle was like when Alan Parrish lived there. It's like, well, Alan Parrish isn't there. He's been out of the jungle for a long time and living in his normal reality. So, like, this is a body switch comedic action adventure movie. That's a complete tonal shift, and I am not okay with that. If you're going to call this a sequel, like I keep telling people, if you want to put Welcome to the Jungle on this thing, just straight, not Jumanji, just Welcome to the Jungle, and you keep the same premise and the same characters and the same character names and everything, I'm cool. You add Jumanji and you start talking about sequel, not spiritual sequel, sequel, and you talk about honoring the legacy of Robin Williams, now I have a whole separate set of expectations by which to judge you on. And if I'm judging you by this set of criteria, you are failing. Because you do not have adequate personnel. You do not have adequate personnel to pass this test. So you have already failed. It's just a matter of how badly you fail. And this is the point that I've been trying to get across on my Twitter feed for the last 2 weeks, is that even to The Rock's face, I will say, you will fail this test. Because you, sir, do not have the acting chops of Robin Williams. And yes, I promised you that there would not be a rant about Jumanji this week, but there had to be a rant about Jumanji.
I mean, I never believed you when you said there wouldn't be, so, you know. All I can say to that is this is where we get to the whole film subjective thing, because you're completely within your rights and you're completely right to think all of that. And I'm just going to look at you and be like, I don't care.
And I implore you to go back and watch the original Jumanji film from 96 with an open mind and watch the performance and watch the progression of that story and watch everything that's around. Don't get caught up in the monkeys driving the police car and the, you know, the black police officer who's just a police officer now because he got fired from Alan Bear's shoes because of Alan's screw up, you know, trying to hit on the on Lilith from Cheers, who's the aunt.
I've seen Jumanji a whole lot. Honestly, I probably see at least some of it, if not all of it, like once a year, because it's always on.
It's a Christmas movie.
It is a Christmas movie. I guess I'll be watching sometime soon too. I get all that. It's just that Jumanji, like, I'm not that attached to Jumanji where they can't go and say, we want to do this.
And if Robin Williams were still alive, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with it because he would be out there campaigning for it and he would actually probably have a cameo role in it.
Yeah, probably.
And then you can have a direct tie. There will not even be Alan Parrish shoes in this film. So, and again, I will say this for the 1,000th time, the board game was picked up on the beaches of France. So how we ended up in Ohio in a high school basement?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is, film as literature is a subjective medium. This is my interpretation and reading of the film. Obviously, apparently no one has thought this far deep into the Jumanji hole. But face is going to melt. This is not going to be good.
Well, you know, just gotta get through it.
If I got through Ghostbusters, I can get through this. And I had a pleasant experience with Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And actually somewhat defended it in our podcast.
You did. So there's hope. I don't think it's gonna happen, but there's hope.
So Chad, speaking of hope, there is a trailer that debuted this week to record shattering numbers. We have finally seen footage from Avengers Infinity War. Your thoughts, sir, on the trailer of all trailers, which will be attached to Star Wars The Last Jedi. Although you seem more preoccupied with the Jurassic World trailer that you keep retweeting about.
No, I don't even care about that. I don't care, care about it at all.
Well, you've been retweeting it, like, when this thing is coming out.
I want to retweet it because it was supposed to come out the same day as this trailer. And then I think Universal was like, oh, crap. And they moved it and it hadn't come out yet. So I really don't care about Jurassic World at all. Infinity War, however, I do care about. So this is a good introduction trailer because it does a whole bunch of things. It gives a set for this movie. Let's know what it's about. It gives us a glimpse of Thanos. It shows you that he's kind of a badass. It shows you that he is looking for stones and doesn't have them all. It shows that some of our people are going to be in peril dealing with these stones. And it also does the added thing of it. There's a movie that comes out before this one, and they give you a heavy dose of the people in that movie in this trailer. Be like, They're important to this movie, and they have a movie coming out. So we're going to hit two things at one time. That movie would be Black Panther, of course. And it teases just enough, because you get
that man a shield.
You get that part, and we see Cap is back. You get Tony with Doctor Strange, which a lot of people want to see, the two Sherlocks together. You have questions, because it starts with a shot of a human Vision with a glowing hole in his head.
No, it starts with a shot of a planet.
Well, it does start with a shot of a planet.
And no one knows where that planet is, because it's got a binary sun, so...
I mean, we knew we were going off-world, and yeah, so there's that. But yeah, human Vision with, I don't know if his jewel is still in his head, or if there's a crater where the jewel was that's glowing, or what the hell is happening there. And why is Wakanda being invaded? There are questions surrounding that. So it did what a trailer of this magnitude is supposed to do.
So Chad, if memory serves, the only stone we don't know the whereabouts of is the Soul Stone, because it's the Mind Stone that's inside of Vision.
That is correct.
Doesn't Lore say that the Black Panther is connected to the souls of every panther that has come before?
I think there's something like that, yes.
Yeah. So wouldn't it make sense that the sacred people of Wakanda would be very protective of their leader and of the potential technology that helps guide him toward his spiritual journey?
I think that would be correct.
So wouldn't it make sense that there would be a soul stone inside of Wakanda?
I think that's exactly where we're going. So, so that would be that one, time, mind, the Tesseract at one point. Hell, all of them except for the one from Guardians of the Galaxy have at one point or another come to Earth. And three or four of them have made their homes on Earth. Which I'm sure they're going to give us a good reason for that.
So what were some takeaways that you had from the trailer?
Just that this movie is going to have to do a lot. It's not a bad thing, because I always planned on them doing a lot, but it's just like seeing all of this in motion. It's going to be a lot. I think one of the big things is that it looks like not everyone's going to be together the entire movie. It looks like we're going to have a faction dealing with the Wakanda stuff, and then the Tony faction, which is eventually going to end up off planet.
Also in Wakanda. Because you get the Hulkbuster shot.
And we see the Hulk in Wakanda, but we never see like Tony or Doctor Strange or Thor anywhere in those Wakanda shots. But because we've allegedly seen some leaked footage, we know that, you know, Spider-Man and Iron Man, well, hell, we saw Thanos give Iron Man that one hit a quitter on another planet.
We also saw Spider-Man in his Iron Spider suit chokeslammed by Thanos on Off-World.
Yeah, and in that leak footage, we see Doctor Strange doing some stuff with Peter Quill, which would lead you to believe Thor is there as well. So it seems like those people are going to be concentrated in New York and Off-World, whereas Wakanda's going to be... At some point, Hulk goes from Tony to Wakanda. But he seems... Him and maybe...
Widow.
I could never tell if she was in Wakanda or not. I mean, I know she's by the Hulkbuster armor, but there are people that speculate that Banner's in the Hulkbuster armor for that. War Machine. I would think Hulk and War Machine at some point make their way over to Wakanda. But I think we'll be in two separate places when all the big stuff happens.
Well, and that's the question of when the big stuff happens, because... Thanos has got his Black Order, and they are about to crew in stones.
Yep.
Couple things to notice here. One, when he puts the Tesseract Stone into his gauntlet, he already has the Orb of Power. He already has the Purple Stone. So he's already been to Nova Corps, taking them out.
Yeah.
Things I took away from the trailer. You can tell this is the culmination event, or as Feige and another great van, the Vanity Fair piece that ran this week about the Marvel 10-year anniversary and people taking the quote about, Feige says it's going to be a finale. And it's like, well, no kidding. Like, what did you expect him to say? Like, 20 more years of Marvel movies. Well, what else did you expect him to say?
Yeah.
I mean, Disney trying to buy Fox. Well, yay. Maybe we can get, you know, Phase Fantastic Four after all. And, you know, Feige said we're going to do stuff that's weird and different. But, like, you get that finale, that sense of it being a series finale, because you have the through line of multiple actors doing voiceovers of Nick Fury's monologue from the first Avengers movie. In the beginning, you know, there was a plan, you know, to bring heroes together, yada, 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 yada. And that through line and having the different voices of the MCU utter those words really helps mythologize this epic event that's going to happen. And it's nice to know that even if Nick Fury isn't in the movie, at least his spirit will be abiding. I like the fact that we're going to separate everybody out. That we're not going to end up, like, start out with all 85 people together at one time. I'm not sure how I feel about Giant Portal in the Sky, although, to be quite honest, I can't really think of another good way for Thanos to show up on Earth. I mean, short of just alien, straight up alien invasion and, like, you know, his ship from Thor Ragnarok showing up in New York, like, there's not a whole lot of other ways for him to materialize on Earth.
Yeah, at least it's not the big giant beam in the sky. But yeah, the way it looks like this is going, he just steps in and out of portals. I think that's your quickest way to get people to and from wherever we're going to be going. I understand people getting tired of it, but it's a necessary evil.
It's a plot device. It's just your basic plot device.
Yeah.
Easy writing. Oddly enough, probably the easiest part of writing this film. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm not a fan of the Russo's decision. I know they talked about it back at Comic-Con, and that was another thing. Like, a lot of people reran their trailer descriptions from Comic-Con and D23 ahead of this release to kind of brief people who were, I guess, not in the know from, or to remind people who from May and July what was shown, to give them an idea of what they might see. But, like, I know the Russo brothers talked at Comic-Con about this idea of, well, you know, he's on a spiritual religious quest, and so he doesn't need to have his armor like he used to have when he was a warlord. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. Like, a dude walking around in a vest in chucks does not carry the same regal importance as a warlord with a helmet and armor coming to take your stones away. So I was disappointed by that. Like, the Hulkbuster scenes were awesome. How Vision is a human being again, I have no idea.
I mean, he's never been human to start, so how do we get here?
Right. Unless it's just an interface that he's a persona that he's putting on, because we know he was constantly evolving as a machine and as a technology and as a sentience. So maybe he's just developed the ability to have a flesh-like, or as some people have suggested, maybe it's Scarlet Witch conjuring a vision of a reality, alternate reality, given that the room bears some resemblance to the House of M comic. And, you know, he is human light. He looks like Paul Bettany. Mm-hmm. So maybe.
So I'm hoping it's more that, because you're not the first person to bring up, you know, he's evolving, and maybe he evolved enough where he can look human. Just from a comic standpoint, he's never been able to do that. Like, even currently in the comic, he has like a whole freaking family. Like, there's a whole family of visions. Mm-hmm. He's got a wife vision. He's got kid visions. But they all still look like androids. So I wouldn't want him to do that. However, I think the biggest reason he looks human is because Paul Bettany was like, look, there's only so much I'm sitting in this chair. You got to give me a break. You got to give me something. You got to give me something. And they're like, okay, we can work this in this way.
And it helps humanize him for his moment of love with Scarlet Witch has been teased over the course of two movies.
Yeah, so. And that will help that all this comes before the inevitable point where his head might not leave his shoulders, but there's something leaving his head. We don't know what that's going to do to him.
And a lot of screaming and gnashing of teeth and pain.
Yeah, they have that shot of the scepter going into his head.
And that is, most people believe it is a member of his Black Order, not Thanos himself.
Yeah, and I don't think they give you that shot in the trailer if that is the actual point that the gem leaves his head. But it does let you know that, yeah, the inevitable is going to happen. That gem has to leave his head. I think, looking at the shots of this movie, I think I full well expect the end of this movie to be Vision, Thanos having all of the stones. That's when he gets all of the stones, and that's when the movie ends.
Yeah. Other things that I took away from the trailer... Peter Quill's mustache. I guess they digitally took Henry Cavill's mustache and put it on. I was surprised people were stunned at that, because if you go and look at the post-credits tag in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 where he talks to Teenage Groot, he has the mustache.
What?
So, I mean, and this is supposed to be taking place shortly thereafter that, because it's Teenage Groot in the shot.
I'm shocked that everybody's so taken with this mustache, because I know most people think he has like a goatee. And in the first Guardians, it was more like a goatee. If you watch the second one, yeah, he has that stubble and it's a vague goatee, but that mustache is heavier than any other facial hair on his face. So much so that the whole time I'm watching him, I'm like, I wish you would just fade that mustache into your goatee to make it even out. But he's like, they lean heavier into his mustache in the second one. So when I saw him at the end of the trailer, I'm like, that's just what he looks like in Volume 2 to me.
Excited to see the possibility of Thor reforging a new weapon. The possibility of him coming back with a battle axe instead of a hammer would actually be quite fun.
That'll be a good nod for people that like the Ultimates, and that Ultimate Thor, it's a hammer / battle axe. It's like a big hammer on one side, an axe on the other side. He's going to get the damn hammer back at some point in over these two movies.
Well, I think that's what he was doing, like in that device where he was like, pulling on both ends and screaming. I don't think that was a Thanos portal. I think that was the heart of a dying star, and he was
a reforging millionaire.
Right.
He'd
have to get, in order to do that, he'd have to be in space, and if he's on the Milano.
This is true. I like that. I want him to have the hammer back. He can keep the missing eye, which. Just last week, people were all up in arms because they had that was Vanity Fair with that spread, and they have a picture of him in whatever he's eventually gonna wear, in Avengers, and he has both of his eyes, and people are wigging out. I'm like,
well, there was a line in the picture description that said something that kind of made people double take and think.
I know Ragnarok had been out for like 2 weeks at that point, but
at the same time though. There have been rumors abounding on the internet for a year and a half about good old Doctor Strange having some healing powers, and Rhodey's kind of got a bad back, and Rhodey's flying around, and he's in that iron war machine suit, so maybe Doctor Strange can do some healing there.
That's right. He does have that back healing power because Benjamin Bratt and all that. I never even thought of that for Rhodey. I was just like, again, because I'm steeped in the comics, there was a point where Tony was like paralyzed. So the only time he could move is when he wore his Iron Man suit. So I was just like, oh, that's just what they're doing with Rhodey. That's fine with me.
Overall, my biggest disappointment, I'd say, was probably just Thanos' look and not the goatee that our friend Mr. Abear was harping on, and the resemblance of Thanos to Kyle Schwarber of the Chicago Cubs. But dude needs his armor. Dude needs to look like an authoritative a-hole.
My thought is he doesn't have the armor because, I'm getting down, I'm going to do the dirty work. And it's not like I'm getting down and like commanding people to do the dirty work. No, as we see, he's like straight up boxing Iron Man and Spider-Man. No, I'm getting down. I'm going to fight y'all. So I'm going to take all my my heavy duty stuff off. I'm gonna just go ahead and do this. And I fully expect him, by the time he gets everything for the gauntlet, he'll be back in Thanos garb and like, okay, now I've got this.
Come at me.
Yeah, I can go sit on my throne now and do what I want. What you gonna do? I don't need to be in my gym clothes because I'm all active and stuff. I can wear my good stuff, sit here, and y'all ain't gonna mess with me.
And this is also a good time to remind people that there are multiple Guardians of the Galaxy with grudges against Thanos who have promised to come back with your large battleships and destroy them.
Yeah, Drax and Nebula, I would think Gamora as well. And I don't know anything, but I would imagine that the first time Drax sees Thanos, that I'm going to imagine that everybody else has a plan. And I'm going to imagine that Drax is going to be like, screw your plan and mess everything up. And Thanos is going to kick his ass.
Well, that's the same way that happened with Ronan.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep, had a plan. He caught Ronan, got his ass whooped. I think we're going to redo this. I think it's going to be worse this time.
Has any nerd on the internet figured out what planet that is or might be?
I don't know. I mean,
you only see a shot of the hurricane-like surface of the planet.
Yeah.
And it's like a very brief shot at the beginning.
I mean, knowing Marvel, it is a planet that would have a name and that nerds would know. I don't like the cosmic stuff, so I never even thought about it. But there's probably some nerd that has, but nobody that I've seen.
Enjoyed seeing Spider-Sense?
I did enjoy seeing Spider-Sense. I hate seeing that goddamn suit. But, you know, as long as it's only in these two movies and not his next standalone movie, I'm fine.
And what about Cap in Wakanda? Does this bring any hedging of bets? Does this bring any hedging of bets for your long-held stance that this will be the, you know, the most African-American movie in the history of the MCU and that Cap won't be in it?
I don't think we'll see Cap or Bucky in the... Okay, I don't think we'll see Cap in the body of the movie. We might see Bucky and Ice Cubes in the body of the movie. I think we'll see one or both in the tag at the end.
Now, the thing I'm interested to see is how we get to the Call Me Maybe.
In one of the shots in...
The Sanctum Sorum in New York, he has the flip phone.
He has the flip phone. So, yeah, I think that's when... if he doesn't call him then, it's like... He's pulled it out because he's like, this is hitting the fan. Maybe. I don't want to do this, but maybe.
Maybe I can't handle this all on my own.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the convenience of Bruce Banner falling from a great height again, this time falling into the Sanctum Sorum.
Yeah, there's going to be a whole bunch of questions about that because, you know, he's on the... I'm just going to call it the Asgard ship because that's where all the Asgardians are.
The Ark.
Yeah, more or less, yeah. So how does he get thrown out and end up in New York? Does Thanos kill all the Asgardians? Is Loki double-crossing everybody again? Or is he giving him the Tesseract as a form of self-preservation? And if I don't think Loki's in much of this movie, so is he the first one to go? I don't have the answer to any of those, but I think if we're about to start getting rid of people, I think Loki's time is up.
For good this time.
Yeah, I think for good.
For real this time.
I think we're... If this is going to be the first time we see Thanos, it'll probably be the first time we see Thanos in action in a movie.
That setup kind of had an opening of a New Hope feel to it.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be early in the movie. We're going to just be seeing Thanos, and we're going to need him to establish his power. Sorry, Loki.
Like Vader. Vader comes on to Leia's transport ship and just starts killing people right away.
Yep. I don't think he'll kill any of the other Asgardians. I think he will be standing there when it happens. And Loki's going to be like, look, here, I got it for you. Can you let us go? And like, okay, I'll let them go. And then he just kills Loki.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. Interesting for sure, but overall, really good impressions of the trailer.
Yeah. I mean, this movie has a lot to do and has a lot to accomplish and a lot of expectations, but I have full faith that they'll pull it off.
And on that Vanity Fair spread and story on the Marvel Cinematic Universe's 10-year anniversary, your thoughts on the revisionist history of Avi Arad just kind of hand-picking his successor there and handing the reins over peacefully to Kevin Feige.
You know,
that was the most PG version of that story I've ever heard.
The victors get to write history, and I read that, and I'm like, that ain't how I heard this went down. But I'm like, you know what? They're clearly talking to, I mean, they're talking to Avi, but they're also talking to Kevin for the story too. And if this is the version of the story that they have come together to tell, all right, y'all can have it. Cause Avi, that tells me that Avi knows that he has lost his battle. And it tells me that Kevin knows that he has won and there's nothing he can gain by saying that Avi's a dick. So he handpicked me and he stepped aside because he didn't like to deal with all these machinations. And Kevin just rolled it. That ain't how that shit went.
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. Not at all. So Chad, let's move on to a movie that is in the news because it's the box office and Disney's once again dominating with Coco. But there's another film that's been out for 3 weeks and took another 55% drop this week. That would be Justice League. We did a whole episode where you went on your discussions about Warner Brothers and DC and what's next. Your thoughts on the fact that Justice League continues to not make money.
I was hopeful that it would make money. Mostly because I don't know how Warner Brothers is going to react.
Still don't.
Again, because to me, you know, we talked about it forever. And the more that comes out about this movie and the things that happened around it, it really seemed that Warner Brothers knew that this was, as we said, something they just had to get through. And they knew they just had to get through it. And they had to do it in the best way possible, expecting the least amount of things good to come from it. So, with that being said, it's like, well, you knew that this movie was this. You knew that this movie wasn't what you needed it to be to make $1 billion. You knew that the name on this movie warranted you making $1 billion, and you knew what you were putting in was not going to make $1 billion, and you were going to get killed for it. But you had to do it, so you did it, and you got exactly what you were expecting. So why do anything different from everything you thought you were going to do after this movie? Why do anything different now? You got exactly what you were expecting. Why change anything? Only thing that's changed is that everything you thought was going to happen is actually here now. But it's what you thought. So why change anything? So that's why I was trying to be hopeful, because I didn't want Warner Brothers to do something stupid. Because stupid seems to be what they do when it comes to DC movies. They can do fantastic things everywhere else, but when it comes to this particular thing, they all just have a gear that says stupid, and they just stick in it. And as much as they try to get out, they just cannot get out of it. So, this movie is, the name of this movie should be $1 billion movie. Right now, after this weekend, this movie is probably not going to hit $700 million worldwide. It could finish below Man of Steel, which is like at $680, which is not good. So the question is, what do they do now? What I think they should do and what they're going to do is two different things.
Well, we know that they're done. We know that, you know, it's Christmas time in Hollywood. Everything shuts down. Yep. So you're not going to hear anything about the future of the DCEU till after Christmas. And here's the thing for me. We sat in that on that long car ride from Baton Rouge, from New Orleans back to Baton Rouge after Wonder Woman, the news of Zack stepping away from Justice League having just come down. And we both said, you know what? The beauty of this is once they get through Justice League, they have a year and a half, because Aquaman's not till December of 2018. To reevaluate and right the ship. You can stay quiet for a prolonged period of time after the movie is out, because, you know, Star Wars will come in right behind it, and then, you know, you don't have another movie to promote for, you know, 12 months. So you can take that time to, you know, go back to the drawing board and redesign your plan. Lord knows they have enough. We've joked many times on this podcast about the number of projects they have in development where DC is concerned. So you could go back to the drawing board and recalculate and come out, you know, new coat doesn't work, you go back to the drawing board, and you bring classic coat back and give the people what they need. It happens all the time. You screw up, you come back, you give them something better, and you move on. I think that's their best course of action right now. I don't think there is a pressing need for a State of the Union on the DCEU between now and, say, Comic-Con.
No.
Unless Johns decides that he needs to go to an interview with Vanity Fair or something where, you know, he wants to give, you know, kind of an update. But, like, until then, outside of Margot Robbie, like, popping off about another Harley Quinn spinoff movie or whatever, there's not going to be a whole lot of things you have to address. The Batman isn't going into production, so you don't have to answer questions about Ben's status in the universe. Patty's already signed on for a Wonder Woman 2, and they're actively developing it.
You'll probably have to say something around the start of Shazam, which is supposed to start in February. So you have to say
something. Because tangibly, the majority of even the internet community doesn't tie Shazam to DC. So, I mean, you can let that movie kind of quietly go through production without a whole lot of, like, status comments.
If they don't, they can announce production, but if they don't show anything, like, you know, when they start doing this, they like to show images of what everybody's going to know what Shazam looks like. If you're not showing us that, then yeah, you don't have to say anything. You can just say the movie's going to production. Because once you show images, people are like, so is this part of the DCEU? Is it continuing that or what?
Just drop a small little pup press release to the Hollywood Reporter announcing that filming has started.
Yeah.
That way you avoid questions about battles lost and wine bottles shipped to people. And, you know, you avoid questions until you have your plan in place. And then there will probably be a shareholders meeting at some point where you'll announce what your new revised release schedule plan is and go from there.
Now, all that is contingent on people not getting fired, which I fully expect people to get fired.
See, I think the only person that gets fired is the person who's hit in the charge of distribution at Warner, domestic distribution at Warner's. In other words, the person who greenlit and supported the whole idea from the beginning probably takes the fall. And Zach's already taken the fall; he's out. Well, so that just leaves your CEO, Mr. Rollercoaster Guy, who doesn't have enough votes to get voted out of office right now, and
there's the there was something that came up this week, and it was actually there was a guy they said his name that actually like greenlit BVS and Justice League and gave Zach little oversight and all that stuff.
That's what I'm saying. Somebody like that who was you want to do this movie for $280 million. Sure.
But he's already gone. Right. He left before or right after BVS. So he's already gone.
His head's already rolled.
His already rolled.
He paid the price for BVS.
I think there could be some pressure on Sugihara because of this and because of the whole lawsuit with the merger thing that could put some pressure on him. But if nobody else gets fired, then that again tells me that they think they fixed the problem. But as long as I keep hearing leaks coming out of Warner Brothers concerning DC, it tells me that the problem is not all the way fixed because stuff keeps getting out. And that stuff is constantly burning them. Always burning them. That is one of the things they need to get fixed. And they need to clearly define what DC Films is. If it were me running Warner Brothers, I'd be like, y'all are your own studio under Warner Brothers banner. Do what the hell y'all want. We'll tell you what your bottom line is. Do what y'all want. Function as your own separate studio. They're not going to do that because that's just too much right. So I don't know. My fear is that no matter what, these movies will continue to struggle because Warner Brothers cannot get a good flow for these movies. And I do not understand how they can't do it when they have franchises. Harry Potter has never had a problem that we've ever heard of. But when it comes to Warner, when it comes to DC, it's always problems.
Because there's a difference. With the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, it's one person's creation, and she's got enough money on her own to command the respect.
This is true.
There's no... John's, like, is a voice who's been around DC and DC Comics since the early 90s, but he's not the founder of DC Comics.
No.
And, you know, it's... Him and Feige were on this worked under Donner at the same time. I mean, he has a similar background to Feige, but they're not empowering him that way. At least they haven't till this point. And DC fans have been begging for him to be the savior, and they haven't empowered him in that way.
So I don't think he needs to be the savior, because he's like the COO. He's a creative whatever. Operator.
Stone Cold Steve Austin was once CEO of WWE.
But
he dumped horse manure in somebody's office.
But he's over everything that is DC. So creative with DC, TV, comics. He's still writing comics.
It would be Jeff Loeb. Jeff Loeb would probably be a good analogy.
Because
he's still writing comic books and he's still over DC comics.
No, he's not writing comics anymore. He might write one here or there, but he's pretty much just over the television side. There is no analog to Geoff Johns that does all this stuff in this world. I think they need somebody to be strictly over the movies. And if it were me, I'd go steal somebody from Marvel that was higher up. The only name I know and the name I would recommend is Nate Moore. And he's one of the, he works right under Feige. And he's largely credited with like saying this is the right time to bring out Black Panther and all this stuff. I mean, you're losing. Go steal from the best and then have him bring that over there.
Can't beat Saban, go get the guy from the Saban tree.
Yeah, and see how that works. I mean, it can't be any worse than what you're doing right now.
Yes, this is 100% true. So we'll continue to follow that story as it develops. So Chad, before we leave and get off of this podcast, your thoughts on a potential talk between Fox and Disney starting back up?
The fact that this has come back up again, and as of, I think, yesterday, they said a deal is probably going to be struck before Christmas. I think this has gone from being something we're just talking about to being something that's going to happen.
Do you know what this reminds me of?
What's that?
The Sony hack. How do we know that Feige and Pascal have been talking to their uppers about merging together and doing... co-producing a Spider-Man movie.
That's all we got hacked.
And all those documents came out. And in those documents is also the break-off of negotiations and the deal seeming dead. And the Russos sending an email to Pascal saying that they were sorry to hear about the deal falling through, but would be perfectly happy helping to produce a animated Spider-Man movie, which has ended up going to Lord Miller. But it wasn't until those emails came out publicly and the fan reaction was what it was, which was like, you stupid morons, if they want to do this. Like, this isn't like some far-off dream. Like, this was like talking about being happening 4 months ago. Like, what are you doing? Like, let's get this done. And then, like, within a month of those emails coming out, El Mumbe puts out his tweet that said, you know, they've got to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, but, like, you may not hear it's done for a couple of weeks, but it's done. And sure enough, 2 or 3 weeks later, out comes the news. Spider-Man's returning home. That's what this reminds me of. The leak gets out there that Disney was in talks to acquire 20th Century Fox and their library and all their access. You know, then they came back very quickly after that and said, no, talks died a while ago. And there was public reaction about the joy of the potential of, you know, the Fantastic Four coming home and X-Men coming home and, you know, James Cameron having Disney money to spend on his Avatar movies, which makes sense because, you know, his Avatar land is in Disney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Deadpool coming back to Marvel as Ryan Reynolds. All these things started piling up, and everybody's hopes got dashed very quickly with antitrust issues and thoughts that there was no way it would ever work. Now, here we are. the possibility that we could get the greatest Christmas present ever. So, I mean, that's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of the Marvel-Sony deal from the Sony Act.
Like, this, to me, this deal is so much bigger than what the space that we're in. Because in our space is like, you know, we're talking about Fantastic Four and X-Men and all that stuff. But just the catalog that Fox has that Disney will absorb.
Which was my contention against why I did not think that there would ever be a chance that they'd buy Sony outright. Because yeah. Sony has all of Columbia Pictures' library. And that's stuff going back to the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And then you're really starting to make a legitimate case for a monopolization of the industry.
Yeah, so...
let's not forget, they're doing a streaming service.
And that's why they want this. So they can lock up all those titles under their streaming service. That immediately... before you announce the streaming service, like, okay, we'll get new Star Wars stuff, new Marvel stuff. But really,
I'm paying $10.99 for animated movies, Disney Channel original movies, and Marvel and Star Wars.
Yeah, and everybody has Netflix, and they probably have at least one other streaming service. Nobody's want to get another one on top of that. But you add the Fox catalog, it's like, okay, so this is a bang for my buck. I can go ahead and get it.
And you know what they also get if they get that?
There's a bunch of stuff, so you gotta tell me.
Exclusive rights to A New Hope. Something they don't have right now.
Yeah,
that's right. And if there is an original edit, somewhere,
maybe you'll
guess
find
who gets rights to those.
Yeah. But in the geek space, I would be happy because that would almost assuredly mean that Fantastic Four is a go. I have no idea what it means for the X-Men, nor do I care because I don't care about the X-Men.
I care because it means that we could potentially have Deadpool in the Avengers, which would be awesome. Because he could make fun of the Avengers the entire time.
We have so many hoops to get through to establish that mutants have always been here and that we're just not hearing about them. I don't even want to think about that right now. Just give me Reed, Johnny, and Sue and Marvel can have its crown jewel of bad guys, Doctor Doom, and actually do right by him.
Have Avatar, Chad.
Who cares?
I mean, it's. I agree. I think it'll be interesting to see over the next few weeks if we can get some kind of confirmation, because I think it would be a huge, huge coup, and it would mean a ton of things.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that, you know, Dark Phoenix is still a
thing. Yeah, I'm dying to see how this movie turns out.
When are we going to see footage, Chad? Because, he's done. They've been in the can, and they, you know, New Mutants is like April, so that's a long way away to get a trailer out there for a November release.
So either we get something for the Super Bowl, or we're waiting till New Mutants to get something for this movie. That's the two spots.
And they would be in the can for a year without showing any kind of footage.
I mean, that's in the can, but you know, they're doing post right now, so, you know, yeah.
Is he doing post, or did he go off and join Bryan Singer on whatever?
No. I don't think highly of Simon Kinberg as a X-Men creative, but I don't think he's like that.
All right, that'll about do it for this week's episode. Here's our upcoming lineup. So it's going to be a very busy month of December because, you know, Star Wars. So here's our current plan. We are going to have Jim from IGN back on the podcast before Star Wars comes out. And the only way that we can utilize that is if we have our friend T-Bob Abear join us. So we will get Jim and T-Bob back on the podcast before Star Wars. The night that Star Wars comes out, me and Chad will be sitting in attendance watching the film and taking it all in its pure greatness. And we will do a podcast immediately following because I don't have to see the film a second time immediately after like I did 2 years ago. So we will come here and we will have a array of special guests to join us and talk about Star Wars. And then after Star Wars, after that first podcast and the post-Star Wars, we're then going to have our friend T-Bob Abear join us again with some other special guests again to talk about more Star Wars. So it's going to be a lot of Star Wars over the next 3 weeks from the Movies on the Brain podcast, so keep an eye out for that. If you want to keep up with this podcast and all of its Star Wars goodness, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan. Don't at me because of your Jumanji hate.
At The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.